Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Happy anniversary to the slap heard around the world. You realize it was on this day, Jeffrey, back in 1982, that Jerry Lawler slapped Andy Kaufman.
I did not realize that.
Yep. That happened way back in 1982. We have a busy show today because we have a whole weekend of sports to get to. Interesting weekend. I mean, you had a Hall of Fame inductions. There was a lot of, got a little thin. Like, I read the Athletic Pulse every day. The Athletic Pulse is the sort of
newsletter.
It's like the early word for the Daily Memphian. Yep. It's the newsletter. Here's what's happening. And you know what it was about? The lead item in the Pulse?
It was about the women's soccer league.
It was about women's soccer.
I read it as well, yeah.
Britain, England, women's soccer, the Lionesses.
Yep.
Defeating Spain.
Spain. Correct.
Defeating Spain. So that's where we are. But Jeffrey, this is the week when the Memphis Tigers report to camp. Like, that happens this week. And this week we got an NFL game.
We do.
This week we literally have an NFL game.
Pro Bowl under.
Lions.
Well, they have caught on. Like, it's now like the under, the total gets to like 34. It gets to be like worse than like an Army-Navy game.
You normally bet this game?
You always just traditionally bet the under because it's like third and fourth teamers and they can't get the snap.
Lions versus Chargers Thursday night. So, but I was, first of all, how was your weekend?
My weekend was great. Thank you, Jeff.
What was the highlight?
The highlight was, let's see. We went to the Rendezvous with my dad and my youngest brother, my mom and dad.
What'd you get?
So I just went, just ribs this time.
Ribs.
Yeah. We did the Rendezvous special.
You got sausage and cheese plate, I take it, right?
I did the one with the ham and the salami and the sausage and cheese. So, we got there a little bit before my parents and brother got there, so I was left to the having to order the apps, and I went with that one.
I had an interesting. I went. My brother had a birthday party of all things in Chicago, and so I went to his birthday party. It was Saturday night, and traditionally it's literally the first time I can ever remember going to a sibling's birthday party, like since we were 16,
correct?
You know, whatever, but you know, the kids are all gone now, right?
Sure.
So you're looking.
You're looking for reasons to get together. Yeah.
So this is my little brother, 60th birthday party. We now range from I don't know how old my sister is. When you have eight siblings, I know literally none of their birthdays.
Do you even know the years?
No, but I know the months.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh,
that's probably that makes
coming
more
up.
Sense,
I'm
yeah.
gonna ask Ellen yeah. when which day it is so I can make sure I wish him a happy birthday like that. I do know the months, and for most of them. But anyway, so two things were interesting about it. One is United. I know if you fly basic, it's like really basic, right? They threaten you. They like you understand.
Jeff, the term is economy, please.
I think this is basic.
I think it is, but isn't it basic economy?
Basic economy. Yes, basic economy. And you understand you're going to be, you know, in with the luggage. Like, I mean, they try to,
yeah,
everything
they
can do.
They are stuffing you up in the overhead compartment.
But yeah. I've flown, maybe not United basic before, but I've flown other basics before because I'm a cheapskate. This one, you are not allowed a carry-on. You are allowed a personal
item,
but not a carry-on. They tell you that. And before you have to check that you understand this, and you have to upload a credit card number that if they see that you have a roll-on bag, a carry-on bag, they will audit. It says it on your. It says
this has to be a new policy because I flew United last year and
I've never had this before.
Yeah, this is a new policy.
It's on your boarding pass,
yeah.
And it says no carry-on.
Yeah,
and so you've uploaded your credit card, so they just automatically, if they see you with a carry-on, they just automatically charge you for the carry-on. That's what they do. And so I was only going overnight.
Right.
And so I literally, you could do a backpack because it can fit under the seat. If you
right.
could fit under the seat, you can do it. But that's the level of economy it was. It was like crazy. I've literally never seen that before. And then the other thing is I had the first experience of not having to take my shoes off. Right. And I'm like, that's cool.
Hang on. I want you to go back
yes.
to basic. Did you fly on like a puddle jumper? Like were you on like one of the CRJs?
I don't know what a CRJ is.
So were you on like the smaller of the jets or was it a wide body?
It was.
How many seats were on each side? Was it two and two?
Two and two.
And then were like in first class, was there one and two?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe that's the difference. Because I've never had that issue, but I always, I purchase my flights based on the plane that I'm going on. And so if I see it's on the CRJ, I want.
It may just be a new level of lack of service, but whatever. Yes. Yeah, so look out for that. In the end, it was fine, but you can't even bring a carry-on. Then, didn't have to take off the shoes going through security.
Yep.
That's a new thing, and it's nice. It's nice to not take off your shoes. But I had this experience. I do the whole go into the little machine, hold your arms above your head.
The diamond cutter, yes.
And then I realized they have a picture of me, as they do, and there over my groin is a large red splotch, like mm-hmm. like a alert,
yes.
Right? And so they say, well, we're going to have to do a groin search.
Mm.
Now, I'll be honest. I'm not, you know, I don't have weaponry now.
Not the first thing you want to hear.
And so they literally are fondling your balls.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're like.
Prostate exam.
I've done it before where they you know, run their hands down your legs or whatever. The pat down. But this was, now, honestly, probably worse to be the guy, the ball fondler.
Yeah, I would presume.
But he's literally bouncing him. He's literally bouncing him.
Yeah.
It was
like a hoppity hop.
You would think that they would actually say, hey, go back through. Let's, because it was clearly a false positive. It was just a machine deciding to have fun with me. Maybe it was part of the whole basic
mm-hmm.
service. But,
maybe they were saying that areas could be used as a weapon.
Maybe. Who knows what they were saying? But there you go. All right. Today on the radio show. By the way, that stabbing in Traverse City.
Hold on. Did you use your passport? Would you
use my passport? Okay. I don't have a real
idea. All right. Me either. I gotta find out Wednesday.
Passport's fine.
Yep.
And my sister actually didn't bring her passport and didn't bring a real ID, and they still let you through.
Yep.
They just whatever. So, so there you go.
Stabbing in Traverse City.
The stabbing that was literally at basically the Walmart we go to. A man goes crazy or whatever else and stabs nine people, I think. Nine people? Just lunacy. Now, thank God it wasn't a gun. If it was a gun, they'd all be dead. Instead, they're all stabbed and bleeding.
Yeah.
Critical condition. But that happened as well over the weekend. I was listening to Unsportsmanlike, and here's where we are. This is where the time of year. Where they start doing pressure rankings.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be honest. So I don't know if they were just quarterback pressure rankings. I think they were quarterback pressure rankings. And so what's the right answer to that? Like, you tell me, is there more pressure on Trevor Lawrence or on Lamar? And if so, or on Herbert? And if so, why? Is there more pressure on Anthony Richardson, right? The guy could lose his job, not be an NFL quarterback. I actually think there's more pressure on Anthony Richardson than there is on Lamar. Like Lamar, if he doesn't win a Super Bowl and he's not great again, you know what happens?
He's going to try again next
year.
He's
still rich as can be, and he's going to try to. Like, look what happened to, like, I don't, like, if you go to Lamar and Josh and Burrow, two of them probably won't ever win a Super Bowl. Well, so what? Like, I mean, in the end, that'll be too bad. Too bad for me. Too bad for them. Dan Marino didn't win a Super Bowl. Dan Fouts didn't win a Super Bowl. Lots of great quarterbacks don't win Super Bowls, and they will still be remembered as great quarterbacks. They've got great lives. They seem like so. That is one kind of pressure. It is a pressure around your quote unquote legacy. But it's not even. Are you great? Like they both. They're both great.
Right.
Like this is a particular. This is a one percenter kind of pressure. This is a first world problems kind of percenter, kind of pressure. Whereas the pressure on Trevor Lawrence is to prove he's not a bust.
Yeah, I would also argue, though, okay, is Trevor going to lose his job?
He might.
Because I'm with you on the, I can listen to the argument for Anthony Richardson, because Anthony Richardson, not only is his job up, like, they've got the replacement or who they would use.
And he's never gotten the big salary either.
Correct.
He's gotten the rookie salary.
No,
he's got plenty of money. He's got more money than we do.
Yeah, exactly. But to your point, he is playing for his job.
He is playing for his job. I think there's more pressure on those people than there are over they have to justify their legacy people. But whatever. The entire conversation is sort of, I don't know. Seems to me like, Cam Ward would have a lot of pressure. He's got to learn how to be a quarterback in the NFL.
Don't you think also, though, it got a little...
How about C.J. Stroud?
So I would argue Stroud has more pressure than Cam. I think Cam got a break.
Clearly, because there's no expectations.
Right. And now that Levis is gone, it's like, all right, you're our starter from day one, but...
Rookie quarterbacks, there's only a certain amount of pressure.
Yes.
Like, I think there's more pressure on C.J. Stroud to prove that he was good, that he was who he was as a rookie, than there is. Okay, how about Penix? Michael Penix, pressure? That team literally, they want to make the playoffs so badly that they traded next year's first round pick in a quarterback rich draft for to draft up and pick a second pass rusher.
Yep.
James Pierce.
Yep.
They are desperate to get to the playoffs. You are the quarterback. There seems to be a lot of pressure.
I don't know if they would do this, but the other aspect of this is Kirk is still there.
And Kirk is looking over your shoulder. Anyway, here's my point. I think pressure rankings are interesting. But I decided, as long as we're doing it.
Yes.
As long as we're doing it.
It's that time of the year.
We're going to come up with and Jeffrey and I each have our top 10, the Memphis sports pressure rankings. Now, I don't know his list, and he doesn't know my list. And I said, but the category is any player, any coach, any member of management, any administrator, any owner,
yep.
Anyone in sports in Memphis.
I think our one and twos are going to be the same.
I don't think they are.
Okay. I'm excited about that.
I'm quite confident our one and twos aren't going to be the same. In fact, I think my one, I don't even know if he's on your list.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to hear it.
We're going to do that next segment because there are a couple things I do want to talk about. I feel like we have to talk about before then. And they're both sadnesses, although very different. One is Joshua Henderson is the football player at Bolton who collapsed on July 7th in the heat and the practice and died over the weekend. 16 years old. Absolutely tragic. And we don't know what happened. We don't know about whether protocols were followed. I don't know exactly how hot it was, what he had been through. Sometimes what happens is someone who's way too young to die collapses and dies, and you learn that they had some susceptibility. Yep. And far be it from me to begin to speculate on what happened in this instance, although it seems to be, from the reports, collapsed because of the heat, right? So, Jeffrey, you played high school football here in Memphis, and you are now the voice of the Owls. What do you make? So, for example, it's interesting that you brought up the Rendezvous because John Virgos, this has been one of his absolute campaigns for forever.
Yeah.
Is about the heat and Memphis football practices.
Calendar.
For high school kids. And in particular, the calendar. Yeah. And so John Virgos had written a piece about Joshua Henderson over in the Daily Memphian. And one of the comments comes from John Virgos. When will we learn that mid-July is way too early to be playing football? This is a result of the crazy rules promulgated by the TSSAA to make money. They start the football season in August to complete the regular season by middle to late October. This is done to create as many brackets as possible to generate revenue. That is why you will see first-round games where some poor 1-10 team is crushed by some 10-0 powerhouse. This, along with the cruel 7 a.m. school starting times, are issues I've been arguing about since I was on the city council, only to fall on deaf ears by the school board. The school's failure to address these two core safety issues are what made me realize the public school system is more interested in increasing its budget than concern for student health and safety. What are your thoughts about, when does practice start?
So practice...
And then there's something it's like an NFL camp at one point. There's practices before practice, right?
Correct. So you have, my understanding on this situation was this was summer workouts, which are before practice starts. This is like conditioning, weightlifting.
Aren't they going to have summer workouts regardless of when the
summer workouts basically start the moment that you get out of school?
Yeah, and that will happen regardless of the calendar.
Right.
the argument about calendar. Now, are some of our workouts in Memphis perilous in intrinsically? Yes, right?
I mean, it's hot, but like, in fairness to all involved, I don't know. Like, when we had summer workouts, you had three options. You could do the 7 a.m., you could do the noon, and then you could do the afternoon. Well, if you're going out at 7 a.m., it's not the like blistering heat. Now, if they were working out,
that, you could argue whether the afternoon should even be available as a choice. Right?
Sure. I presume now it had, like, that was, God, over 20 years ago now. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, so I assume it has changed in that. So I don't.
I assume there is much more attentiveness.
Yes.
To.
I mean, I know that is because.
Hydration.
You can't eat. Well, and on top of that, the certain hours that they. Like, for instance, when I was practicing, we didn't have it's too hot. You've got to wait until 6 or 7 p.m. to start practice. Like, we just had.
And there are those rules now.
Correct.
Well, last year across the country, in the month of August, there were 7 deaths from high school or middle school football players who were practicing in the heat. And that seems like, I mean, there's a lot of kids out there practicing in the heat, right? Your chances are you send your kid out to practice in the heat in August, they'll be fine.
Yep.
I don't know that there is, in terms of his complaint about the schedule generally.
Yep.
Which part of that do you co-sign?
The part that I definitely co-sign is it is clearly designed to get as many teams into the playoffs as possible, and not every team deserves to be in the playoffs. Like, that's a huge part of it.
And so does the season start too early because of that?
The problem, though, is because John Varlis and I have talked about this. The issue is if you start looking around the other schools in the region, like, it's not as if Tennessee is an outlier. Mississippi's starting around the same time. Alabama's starting around the same time. Where it starts to become an issue, though, is, okay, well, is that because someone did it first and everyone just started trying to keep up?
Should we all wait until September? There shouldn't be a high school football game until September.
Because as Mark pointed this out over the weekend, his first experience of school starting this early was moving down here.
It's crazy that it starts so early down here.
He basically said the school's up where now he lives in the suburbs of Chicago.
We started after Labor Day.
It's Labor Day, and then he's like, in D.C., all my friends, their kids are starting the week before Labor Day. I mean, we are almost a month early, and it keeps.
So a school itself starts early,
correct.
And therefore school sports start early.
Correct.
I'll be honest. I appreciate John's passion for this, and he delved into it a lot more than I have. It is true, though. When school itself starts in August, what are you? You're going to be practicing in August, if not playing in August.
I think the question, right? I would like answered is, why are we starting school as early as we are? Like, because it's even a couple weeks before, even when it feels like it just keeps creeping up.
We'll
creeping
get Jody Jody on the Ask the Memphian. Yep. He does this Ask the Memphian feature. Why the hell does school start as early? Anyway, that's an incredibly sad story.
I can definitely say this. It's everyone involves worst nightmare.
Yes. It's everyone involves worst night.
Like, I know there's this reputation that football coaches are just like military drill sergeants.
They're not there to kill their students.
No, this is their worst nightmare.
Yeah. And then the other news was that former Shelby County Mayor Bill Morris died since we've been on the air. He served for 4 terms as county mayor. So you're familiar with his term. I mean, I knew him. He's
before Jim Rout, right? Because my first is Jim Rout, really.
When I moved here in 96, Jim Rout was the county mayor. And Bill Morris, he was from 78 to 94. I will say, across social media, Republicans and Democrats, Memphians of all stripes, black and white, whatever, seem to be celebrating and applauding the memory of Bill Morris. Now, I knew him as an incredibly enthusiastic, genial Memphis Tiger fan, among other things.
Sure.
Big Memphis Tiger fan. And he led a fascinating life. He grew up near Tupelo, Itawamba County. He comes to Memphis State. He is sheriff at the age of 31. He is elected sheriff at the age of 31. He had no, at that point, he had no history at all. Again, this is from a piece that Jody wrote in the in the Daily Memphian, and another piece that Bill Drees wrote in the Daily Memphian. You can read both of those at the Daily Memphian. But he was the sales manager at Southern Auto Leasing, Jeffrey, before he ran for Shelby County, before he ran for sheriff. And that was, he had no experience. He wins the sheriff at 31. And then because of that, when James Earl Ray is apprehended in London, he is the one who meets him in Millington. And so he gets, you know, he locks up James Earl Ray as sheriff. He ends up running, I think he ran for city mayor first. He ends up running for county mayor, and 4 terms, the longest serving county mayor from 78 to 94. Among the things that he is credited with, bringing international paper to town, instrumental in bringing the Buffalo. I read that he was instrumental in getting the Buffalo
at Shelby Farms.
To Shelby Farms. I don't know exactly how that worked out. Are you a fan?
Absolutely.
I'm a fan of the Buffalo at Shelby Farms. But then another one is the Pyramid. And I guess I would ask you this. Like, Jim Strickland was quoted, I think it was in Jody's piece, saying he was instrumental in the Pyramid. And without the Pyramid, there would be no Grizzlies, right? And so you got to credit him, therefore, sort of, with the Grizzlies. And yet, the Pyramid itself, here's my question for you. Pyramid, success or failure? Memphis success, Memphis failure. Pyramid.
I think in its totality, you got to say failure, right?
And now, of course, it has been repurposed.
Right.
Do you like the basketball? Do you like that we have a pyramid on the
Mississippi
River?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, what I've always struggled with the pyramid, and I'm not, because it's a little bit before, like, I'm conscious, and I'm just not enough of a historian. It's unclear to me if it was bad civic leadership or that guy that was the swindler.
Oh, very clearly, like, Sidney Schlenker. The execution of the pyramid was bad. There's no question about that. The design, the fact that there wasn't enough leg room, there was the fact that it didn't deliver on its promises, it overpromised, underdelivered, all of that. The other thing that Memphis Tiger fans will tell you, particularly the basketball fans will tell you, is that it wasn't necessarily good for the basketball program. They were strong-armed. There was money that they had to create a new basketball facility. And they were strong-armed into using that money for a municipal arena downtown. That would have been the moment to make sure you had an on-campus basketball arena. And they were strong-armed into that. Now, it is true that without the Pyramid, at least as a temporary holding place for the Grizzlies, would you have ever gotten the Grizzlies? Maybe not. So I can see that. I can see that argument. The Pyramid, I think, is a mixed...
I like the concept.
It's a very mixed legacy.
But I do like the concept.
It's dreaming.
Like, there's so many boring type arenas.
Oh, no, it's swinging for the fences.
Like, it does feel like the execution was...
The execution was terrible. Execution was terrible. Anyway, acclaimed as a great Memphian, and for me, always a true gentleman, lovely man. And my prayers and thoughts to his family. All right, we're going to come back and we're going to do the Memphis Sports Pressure Rankings Top 10 list, because we're getting with the program.
I do not feel good about my mind.
You don't feel good about yours? I actually feel pretty good about mine.
I feel good about the names I've included. I do not feel good about my ranking.
That's fine. Before that, I'll tell you, if you're looking for a new financial institution, Leaders Credit Union would be the place to look. LeadersCU.com/ESPN to learn more about it. Or download their fabulous app. I'm a technological idiot, and I can use the app. And the people, Claire's been thinking about getting a house for her kids, and then we might use it as a rental property, whatever. So she's been exploring having a mortgage. Unbelievably nice, attentive, return every email instantly, every call, every question. They're just good people, and the service is terrific. The rates are great. It's Leaders Credit Union. Whether you're looking for a car loan, a mortgage, whether you're just fed up with your bank, check out Leaders Credit Union, leaderscu.com/ESPN. Back in a moment with the Memphis Sports Pressure Rankings. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. We're getting with the program on Unsportsmanlike. They did the the quarterback pressure rankings, and it's the time for pressure rankings, people. So we're doing the Memphis sports pressure rankings. Jeffrey and I each have our top 10 list. Who's your number 10, Jeffrey? We'll alternate.
Jeff, I put it number 10. I put Penny Hardaway.
Penny Hardaway. He's on my list a little higher than 10. Why is he 10 for you?
10 for me because I do really like the stability that the program has been under. I do think we oftentimes kind of forget he was learning on the job. And I do feel much better about how he runs his program now than I did 3 years ago.
But it's essentially saying no pressure or very little pressure. And he's going to the eighth season. He's won one NCAA tournament game. Isn't there an argument for more pressure on Penny?
It always comes back down to the same point that you and I always make. Or else what?
And he's Penny. I don't have him in the top. I'll say this. I don't have him in the top five. I have Brandon Lewis at 10 for me.
He was on my others receiving votes.
Let's talk about others receiving votes. I had Zach Edey on others receiving votes.
He made my list.
He made your list. Okay, well, we'll wait on him. And then I wondered about Gigi, you know, like, is Gigi going to be an NBA player or not? Is he on your others receiving votes or on your list?
So I had the clump of Gigi, Vince.
I had Gigi and Vince.
Yeah.
In your list or on others receiving votes?
Others receiving votes.
Yeah, I had him others receiving votes too. I had Bill Hardgrave as others receiving votes.
So I kind of lump
him with Ed Scott somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. That's right. I didn't have him. I have Ed Scott on my list, but I don't have. So, but Brendan Lewis, he is the quarterback for this team, ostensibly. He's got guys looking over his shoulder. He's not had a winning record as quarterback, and he is succeeding Seth Hennigan and is expected to lead this team to a conference title game. I think there is, like, we don't know him, anything, you know, but sure. I think there is some pressure on Brendan Lewis. It's certainly.
We know he's a sharp dresser.
More than any other Memphis football player, right?
So the reason why I did not include him is because I'm just not convinced he's going to be the quarterback for the season.
Okay. So that's my 10. And your 10 was?
Penny.
All right. I'll go 9. My 9 is Tuomas Isolo.
Okay, he made my list. He's a little higher.
And I have him on the list, but only that high because I thought about leaving him off altogether. He's a first-year coach,
yep,
et cetera. Like, and they obviously like him a lot, right? And I think there's more pressure on other people in that organization than the head coach. But he has his things he believes in. And if they don't work, NBA coaches are imminently disposable. You could literally be gone by the All-Star break if it doesn't work. Like, and he moved his family here from Europe. So I have him on my list, but not that high because in the end, he's a first-year coach. I think he will be. I think he will be given some grace because he's a first-year coach, but probably more pressure than your average first-year coach, right?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say Edelman at Denver probably has more pressure on him because you've got Jokic and, you know, anytime you've got that type of player. For the reasons you listed is actually why I put him high. The guy that he's replacing.
Is he in your top five?
He is in my top five.
He's in your top five?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can discuss that. Mike Brown is under more pressure, right? In the next.
Yep.
I think Mike Brown is under more pressure, but that's fine. I can have Isolo higher than that. He's my number 9. Who's your number 9?
My number 9 was Cedric Coward. And I get it. He is a rookie, whatnot. But to me, he's under a different type of pressure. It's not the type of pressure of, okay, you've got to elevate this team. But he is under the pressure of, okay, we need to see the flashes. We need to see what we quote unquote think we drafted so that you can feel good about, okay, if this is going to work, it's this guy is going to
He's not on my list because I think the pressure on Cedric Coward is really the pressure on the people who picked Cedric Coward. I don't think there's particular pressure on him. I think the pressure is on the people who picked him, but I like that pick. Okay, who's 8?
Number 8 is the people that picked him, Zach Kleiman. And so I think had I done this exercise last year, I think Zach would have been much higher. But I think what we kind of learned through this turbulent and dramatic.
You think the reset has taken the pressure off of Kleiman?
I have. And also, I think to a certain degree, Robert Pera kind of proved like he trusts Kleiman, and he has a little bit more rope than I think I believed he did last year.
So you have Isolo under more pressure than Kleiman.
Yes.
I have Kleiman higher. I have Kleiman in my top five because I agree with everything you said. I think he has definitely not just reset the team. He has reset his own timetable by resetting the team, right? And I think we believe, and I said all along, the organization has faith in Kleiman. Having said that, if things go badly for this team, if Cedric Coward looks like a flop, if Desmond Bane is lighting it up,
sure,
and Orlando is crushing it, if I think as much faith as there has been in Zach Kleiman, again, he's not my top 10. And I bet a lot of our listeners would have him in top five, maybe even one.
And to be clear, we're doing an entire city's worth of sports.
Yes. But so
it's like cracking the top 10.
You have him. He is in my top five. He's not easy. And he's in your top 10. Okay. So you've gone so far, Penny 10, Coward 9, Kleiman 8.
Yes.
I've gone Brendan Lewis 10, Isolo 9. I'm going Ed Scott 8. The reason that I don't have Hardgraves, I have them together. And the reason that I have them, I imagine you have them higher.
Yes.
The reason why I don't have them higher is I don't think people expect anything from them. Like, sure, get into a conference, but nobody expects them to get into a conference. So it's a little bit like, it's a little bit like being the coach of a team with no expectations that is all of a sudden elevates this team. Is there pressure on Ed Scott and Bill Hardgrave to make it work and figure out the future at Memphis? Yes. But if he doesn't, if Ed Scott doesn't by this time next year, if they're in the exact same situation in the conference, no one's going to be saying Ed Scott's a failure because he didn't do what he was paid to do. So I do think there is pressure on him. Hell, pressure to fill that stadium, pressure to fill both stadiums, pressure to fill both stadiums to continue to raise money. Maybe I should have him higher for those. I think there are pressures of the job on him, but I don't think there's pressure. I don't think if the reason you have him on there is because he's under pressure to get to a better conference, because I don't think people expect him to.
So I'll explain later why I have him higher. I get what you're saying, but I have a kind of a little different point of view on that.
Okay.
So are we up to 7?
Isolo, Ed Scott is 8. I'm at 7, and I put Ryan on there at 7. And Ryan for me, I'll tell you, Ryan, Penny and Ryan for me are 6 and 7. Penny 6 and Ryan 7. I struggled. Who's under more pressure?
I have Ryan higher. The problem though is I keep coming back to, even though I have him higher, or else what? Like, I don't think this team's going to collapse.
I don't think either of them are under any threat, barring disaster, really, of being fired. Penny would, like, if Penny had a really bad year this year and he were not Penny, he would be fired. Right. If he had a really bad year this year, if you take the off the court stuff and a bad year,
I'll say this:
a guy who was Joe Hardaway would be fired.
It would be easy to do it.
Yeah, he would be fired. I think it's harder for Ryan. Ryan has Ryan has been over the last 2 years. They are 21-5, and they aren't going to lose. They aren't going to lose 7 games. They're just not. So what's the pressure? Here's the truth. He has a bad year. He wins 7 games. He has a really, really bad year. He wins 7 games, and he gets another year automatically on his contract. How is that much pressure? There's pressure on Ryan maybe to get another job or to get to – but
I think the biggest pressure is, despite all those things that you just said, the fan base does not believe in him.
I think that's true.
And again, is there something that can change? I don't know. I mean, everyone loves a winner. Like, is there a way? Like, I think after the Florida State win, I do think the fan base was ready. Like, that's the other thing about fan bases.
Yeah, they wanted to get on board.
They want to.
Signature win.
Correct. Everybody wants to support their team. They want to be with their guy. We got our guy. And then you flip right around and the Navy game happens.
You think there's more pressure on Ryan than Penny, though. You had Penny at 10. And you have Ryan higher than this.
Yes, because
let's go here. So my 10 through 5 are Brendan Lewis, Tuomas Isolo, Ed Scott, Ryan Silverfield, and Penny Hardaway. That's yep. Seven. That's counting down from up. Who are your 10 to 6? Who is that? Penny's 10, Coward's 9, Kleiman's 8. Who are 7 and 6?
I mean, I know this isn't sports pressure, but I put Sincere Parker at 6.
Okay, at 6.
Yeah.
Well, there's definitely some pressure on Sincere Parker. I would say that was a different category yep. that I wasn't addressing.
Uh-huh, but I did put him at 6.
Okay, who'd you have at 7?
I put Zach Edey at 7.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So I thought about Edey. He's in my other receiving votes. Why is Zach Edey under pressure?
I think, like, yes, it stinks with the whole injury and whatnot, but, like, he is another part of the, okay, if you're going to see how this is going to work in the reimagining, it really needs to build upon what he was starting to do at the end of the season, when he was starting to get more comfortable, when he was starting to offer things that you could see. Like, when he was off the floor and you realize, like, they can't get a rebound. Like, I think he is on, like, under pressure to feel like he's still progressing.
The injury, you're right, delays it all. So, and there's a certain amount of pressure to recover from injury.
Yes.
Like, whatever. There's a certain... But then... You want to, anyway, in year two, you want to see a big leap, just generally.
Yeah.
And then secondly, you have this situation now where he is, all right, fine. It didn't work out that well for you the first half because you weren't used correctly. Now you're being used correctly. You're setting screens. We want you to learn to see that you actually can finish at the rim and be the player that you were in college. And you are an integral part. Like, no, Jalen Wells isn't on either of our lists,
nope.
Right? Because we expect a leap from Edey in a way that we don't expect
yes.
a leap. Is there any other? Well, no, I won't do that. So I can co-sign having Edey on the list. He was my first one that I left off the list because in the end, if he's not great, so what? He's
well.
Still
the up. Other problem though I had is like yes, they can do other things, but. There's if he's not good, there are not real answers on the team already.
That's true too. Okay, I think you're making a compelling case for pressure on Zach Edey. All right, top five. I'll go. Well, I bet my five is higher on your list. So who's your five?
My five is Tuomas Isolo.
Isolo, and why do you have him where you have him?
The previous coach won a lot of basketball games, and everything that you just laid out. He's going to have a system and a way of doing things. If it doesn't work, like, I just think it's going to be a whole lot easier to move on. And I also think what is interesting about this season is what happens to them if they get off to a slow start? Because you're not going to have Edey.
He will be. What will happen then is, again, is this going to be on Isolo or is this going to be on Kleiman? What will happen is you'll immediately hear, my God, he wasn't good last year. They didn't when they named him coach, they did not instantly turn it around, and he made mistakes, some very visible mistakes, and they didn't even do a search.
Right.
And I'm kind of going with, and he's got the pressure of being a European coach.
Exactly.
He said he's felt that. He feels that pressure.
Sure.
People are gonna very quickly turn on him and saying, what a moronic hire.
He's got a lot of things working against him.
I think you're right. You've convinced me I have him too low. I have him at 9. I think there's more pressure on Isolo than I confess to. Now, this person is certainly higher on your list. He's my 5. But I have reasons. Ja Morant.
Okay, I lumped him.
What?
I lumped him.
You lumped him?
Yes.
There was no... We should have had a no lumping rule. Ja Morant is...
But he is higher on my list, yes.
What?
But they are higher on my list.
So you lumped him with
Jaren.
So I don't. I think he's. Jaren isn't on my list. And Jaren isn't on my list because he just got his contract. And so what? Like, and he's not the focal point. He may be, in fact, the most effective player, but he's not the focal point. He just got his contract. And in the end, you know, he's going to wear nice clothes and tell people to vote. And I don't think Jaren's under particular pressure. Why do you think Jaren's under pressure?
So I think they're both under pressure because Jaren, yet again, did not have a great playoff performance. Like, he wasn't bad. It wasn't as drastic maybe as some other playoff performances, but it certainly wasn't like a stamp of, okay, this problem is solved. And then the reason why I lumped him with Ja is, to me, like, they've now sorted everything out. All right, these are the two guys. Like, it was the big three or the core three, right, whatever it was, however we phrased it.
Are they
it.
Number one for you?
No, they're three.
Okay. I there's very clearly pressure on Ja, pressure to stay healthy, pressure to reassert himself as being one of the compelling players in the league, pressure to show that he's the leader of this team, pressure to keep his continue to have a off the court record that he can be proud of, pressure to be the face of the franchise, and everything he does is scrutinized.
An intense
to say there's not pressure. Now, in the end, the reason I don't have him higher is he still fails, and you know what? He's Ja Morant. He's still got gazillion dollars of whatever. Like, he look at what a failure he has been of late, you know, in terms of staying healthy, producing in the, you know, leading the team to meaningful wins. And if you go all the way back to the off the court stuff,
yep,
it's been a pretty iffy track record for Ja over the past 3 years, and he's still a celebrity in China.
No,
he's still Ja Morant.
I'm with you. What I wonder about those, the reason why I lump them together is, now that they've cleared everything out,
they've bet on those two.
Correct. And if it's not working, then you start to get into this. The organization made it about as clear as possible. Ja Morant is a Memphis Grizzly. They're not entertaining anything. And yet, look at how loud the noise got around moving Ja Morant, whatnot. It's only going to get louder if they're sitting there in January outside looking in at the play-in, and you know what I mean?
All right, so I had you at Isolo 5, I had Ja 5. I have Kleiman, I'll say this because we talked about him earlier, at 4. And the reason is that if Kleiman fails, and if this experiment fails, if this reset fails, yeah, I don't know if we'll get another GM job. Maybe, probably. Like, you know,
I think it's his baby. Yeah.
It's his baby, and now he's got a second, he's taken his second run at it. And so I had Kleiman at 4 and Ja at 5. Who do you have at 4?
At number 4, I put Ryan Sorfield. And so the point that I was going to make to you is that, okay, we can also say filling the building is an Ed Scott question, but to me it really boils down to, like, with Ryan Sorfield, it's like, how are you going to, in this era where not many people care about the games, it's like, can you prove in a year where you're not the favorite to make the AAC title game, can you actually get it done? Because you were pointing towards last year, and as I've always pointed out, Tennessee didn't win the national title with Peyton Manning. They won it the next year with Team Martin. It's like, when you kind of have made a little bit of the reset, nobody's expecting much from you, can you show that you're more than just putting a team together? Have you really built a program?
All right, my 3 off the board here, Alex Simmons is 3. She's the women's basketball coach at Memphis, and I really do believe, like, she is someone who, if she doesn't win this year, she will be fired, and women's basketball should be, like, we're seeing everywhere that women's basketball matters all of a sudden. Like, we know that women's soccer is a success here. We know that men's soccer is a success here. We know that men's tennis is a success here. Why can't women's basketball be a success at the University of Memphis? And it has not been, and this is going to be year 3 for her. I think it is, again, like, she's not the most high-profile pressure.
Yeah, no,
we're going to be talking about it every day. But I think she knows, I suspect, that this is a critical year for her. And I think women's basketball should be better at the University of Memphis.
So the reason why I left it off, I think everything you said there is fair. The reason why I left it off is I think women's basketball has become a vanity project. When you look at the schools that win,
right,
it's schools that either have a tradition and they're willing to spend money. But all of the, like, if you look at the gap between good teams and the bad teams, like, all these great players are just clustering up at the certain places that are paying. And I'm just not convinced that Memphis is, like, in the game.
Who is 3 for you?
Three for me was Ja and Jaren.
Ja and Jaren is three, which we've discussed. Okay. I'm going to tell you who my one and two are, and they're kind of lumped. They're kind of lumped, but it's the same reason.
All right.
Two is Paul Young.
Okay.
And one is Jason Wexler.
Okay.
And I have them because the most important thing, as we discussed last week, is getting a new lease for the Grizzlies, right? You don't want to be the mayor who loses the Grizzlies.
No.
And so I thought about putting Paul Young number one. Like, he's got to deliver. And what we know, what in order to get a longer Grizzlies lease, a Grizzly new lease, he's got to create a safe city that he's delivering to the Grizzlies. Persuade them that this is a city that you want to be invested in. Make things happen. But Wexler, I think, honestly, like, he is in that ownership management group. He is the Memphian. He's a real estate guy in Memphis. He cares deeply about the city of Memphis. His money is invested in the city of Memphis. And he, by the way, in addition to, he's president of the entire organization, but they got to figure out the TV deal. Like, they got a million things. He's got to fix the city. He's got to figure out the TV deal. He's got to come up with a new lease. He's got to, like, do I think there is more pressure on Jason Wexler than any other? And he's a Memphian. Like, in the end, if for some, and I don't think they're going to up and leave, but if they did up and leave, like, he'd be still here, you know? So my number one and number two are really for the same thing. It's because the future of that franchise is at stake. And number two is Paul Young, and number one is Jason Wexler.
Okay, so the reason why I left Wexler off my list is that more times than not, the critical decisions are not going to really be his call. So if we take the...
It won't be his call, but I think he's got to create the circumstances that make the Grizzlies want to stay.
I view him more as, like, kind of the intermediary. Like, he is the go-between.
So who are you putting two and one?
So two, I have Ed Scott, Bill Hargrave. I lumped them together. And so
And what's your reason for having them where
they... So I'm with you in the sense of it's not going to get held against them if they don't get to the Big 12, if they don't get to a power league. But what I do think is the incredible pressure is you've got to pick we've seen plenty of G5 mid-major programs. Once upon a time, Southern Miss had a great football program, and they banked on the wrong.
The future of a proud future of Memphis athletics is in their hands.
Correct. And you've got to navigate very complicated waters, because I think a lot of times you're probably going to have to pick between, all right, is this going to be the right spot to wind up? Is that going to be the right spot? You're going to have to project out, and it's not going to be like a clear, this is the right spot to go to.
The stakes are incredibly high for Memphis. The only reason I had them lower was I don't think they're under imminent hell. Every administrator who has come before them has failed at this task.
Sure.
And so can they really be expected to do what you know, you name it, literally every day, whether it's Laird Veach or David Rudd or, like, all the way back, no one has done. But it is, the stakes are incredibly high for them. And so who's your number one?
My number one was Paul Young in the city of Memphis.
Paul Young in the city of Memphis. Yeah. No, we're there then. We actually, the topic for us, we both came, I just had two people representing that, and you had one person representing that. That Paul Young is the guy who's got to get this done.
Yes. For every reason that you just said.
I think our lists actually were startlingly similar.
I felt good about the names on the list. I didn't feel great about kind of the one that I felt the most strong about was one. Like, I went one, and then it was started to.
Yeah, and I had those two guys. I had Young and Wexler lumped together as one and two. That's how I consider it. So anyway, there's your official two Memphis sports pressure rankings. Oh, by the way, in terms of Memphis football, John has a column up, and I don't know how this fits into it, Jeffrey, but he points out that according to Las Vegas, Memphis is now, this is a column that John has up at the Daily Memphian, Memphis is the fourth favorite.
Yep.
Is this, do you think, the lowest they've been under Ryan's tenure, literally since he got the job? Have they ever been picked lower?
I thought
maybe early. Ago, when, like, of course, early on, Cincinnati, UCF were still in the conference. Houston.
So I want to say it was fifth.
First year of Seth, maybe?
Well, because we also.
He inherited a program that was crushing it with Brady White as quarterback.
I think the second year, they probably had to be lower. I thought there was a year in the last. In the Seth era where they were picked fifth in the league. I mean, the thing is,
it's weird though. What's weird is that the expectations, it's time to get to the conference title game, are sort of descending at the same time that it feels less likely than ever that they'll get
to
the conference
title game. It feels like a reset almost. It's like the, you know, all right, well, we're transitioning from, we brought in like a stopgap quarterback, or we get turned to AJ.
This is the year that people are going to say, it's time, Ryan.
The thing that I do like though, I do like their schedule this year in the league. So this year you get at FAU, you're going to be a road favorite. Tulsa, you're going to be a massive favorite. At UAB, massive road favorite. You get USF at home, you get Tulane at home, and you get Navy at home. So your three toughest games are all at home.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk to Chris Harrington on the other side. It's Jeff Calkins Show on a Monday, 92.9 FM ESPN.